you for joining us for live paranormal radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show hosts and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
It's Haunted Playground right here on the Live Paranormal Radio Network. We're at liveparanormal.com and all of our syndicated affiliates, iHeartRadio.com, which is wonderful, Google Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Podomatic, Blog Talk Radio, Player FM, and the list goes on and on. I'm your host, Sheena Metal. I'm a psychic medium. I'm an interfaith minister. I'm a 27-year talk radio host here in Los Angeles. And this is Haunted Playground. Every week, I gather the brightest and most beautiful minds and hearts and souls in the paranormal and spiritual community, and we talk about everything from is there life after death, to I think there's a Loch Ness Monster in my above-ground swimming pool. You can find me at SheenaMetalSpiritual.com, and this week my guest is a wonderfully talented, many things, hypnotherapist specializing in past life, regression, and trauma, also a wonderfully talented filmmaker who's done two films and a mindset, life, all-around wonderful spiritual person. Please welcome to the show, for the very first time, any of my shows, the wonder. But I've been on a show with her, but she's never been here, the wonderful Jackie Blue. How are you, my friend? It's wonderful to have you here, and it's going to be great to hear your voice. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing? Thank you so much for inviting me.
Oh, my God, it's totally, I love having you here. We kind of accidentally, on purpose, wound up on a Halloween show together, and instantly I wanted to have you on the show, and so I'm so excited you're finally here.
Oh, yay, that's awesome. Yeah, I wanted to talk more with you because I remember you were asking me questions, well, do you think this and do you think that about, like, regarding past lives, and I was like, oh, I want to get on a whole discussion about past lives. That's one of my favorite things to talk about and have been since I was 13.
Yeah, and you know what? I was 5. So I'll tell you my quick story so I don't bore listeners who've heard it. I was 5, and my mom and I were up late on Christmas Eve, and we were watching the 1939 black and white version of A Christmas Carol. And the beginning of the film starts with a camera going over London, which, you know, was probably models, but it's panning over London on Christmas Eve while God Rest You Merry Gentlemen plays. And I said to my mom, that's the place from my dreams. That's the place I dream about. And she said, no, honey, that's England in the late 1800s. And I said, no, I've been dreaming about that place my whole life. And that was what kind of really sort of put it on my radar. And then all throughout my childhood, things from the Victorian era in London, to the point where I've never been to London because I'm scared I'll go there and it will be overwhelming. But my nephew's getting married there in February, so I'm going for the first time. But even as a kid, the strange impressions from past lives can start, right?
Oh, yeah. In fact, what's really funny is in one of Brian Weiss's books, he talked about it. He talked about children can remember where they came from before this life. Up until about the age of 5 when they start, like when they get accumulated into school, but it's like something switches off in the brain around like 5 or 6 and they start to become, I don't, if you're ever around small children, you'll notice like right around that age, they just, it's something changes. It's like they go from toddlers to being kids, something changes. And when my twins were little, they're 18 now, when they were little, one of them used to always talk about this place, and he called it the Big Earth. And I was like, Elijah, where's the Big Earth? Like, what are you talking about? And in the Big Earth, he would tell me all about it. He had a yellow car that flies, and it's up there with the moon and the stars. And he would just be, it's just like this, but a lot bigger and much better and prettier. And, you know, he would just describe this whole other planet, and then when he was like 5, he stopped talking about it. And my other twin, his older brother, would talk with New York accents and Texas accents, like really strong. He had never been to New York or Texas, and yet he comes talking with these accents, like, where did you pick this up from? And, I mean, he would just be doing, like, regular everyday talk, except all of a sudden he's talking with an accent. And he had a severe fear of planes. Like, when we moved from Florida to California, I had to pay one of my friends to take a train ride with him because he was so adamant he would not get on the plane with us. And so I looked at that as, like, past life trauma. Like, oh, I want to, like, you've never been on a plane and had a bad experience. There's no reason for you to have this phobia, because it goes beyond fear when it's an irrational fear with no known cause. So it's a phobia. And I'm like, you have no reason to have this phobia. Like, there's no past plane trauma in this life. So where does it come from? And
right.
I think when we have those things, when we have a phobia, a trauma, like, we've never been in a plane accident in this life, yet for some reason we have this paralyzing fear of flying and don't know where it came from. That could be past life trauma that we carried, that our soul carried, our subconscious memories.
Yeah. You know, an interesting thing, and I agree with you 100%, my cat has a thing about, I don't live far from a naval base, and my cat has a thing about military planes. And it can be jets or it can be old planes, because they do the air shows here, right? They pull out the World War I, the World War II. Now, where he is right now, we're in a flight class. So the commercial planes go over all the time, and he doesn't bat an eyelash. And some of them are low because they're going to Long Beach, which is just 2 towns over, right? So pay any attention. But some old Cessnas go overhead, no attention. But some old, you know, fighter jet from World War I goes over, and he panics and he puffs up and you can't calm him down. And and it was funny because, you know, my spirit daughter saw that once and she was like, does Cullen have a thing with, like, the Air Force or a plane? Like, what's going on? So I think animals have it too, right? They have their own trauma from their lives, and from life to life, we're a little bit of everything. So, you know, I could be your house cat next time.
Yeah, exactly. No, I'm here.
So what was yours like at 13?
Well, at 13, my mom, I was always a big reader. I always loved reading. And, you know, I was the weird one. I prefer reading nonfiction to fiction. And my mom was reading a book called Many Lives, Many Masters by Brian Weiss.
Yes.
And
uh-huh.
When she was done with it, I grabbed it, and I was 13 years old, and I started reading this book, and I just got so into it. I just thought, this is so cool. Like, I want to find out, like, I want to have a past life regression. I want to find out what my past lives were like. And I mean, I was 13, so I hadn't lived a whole lot at that point. I mean, I thought I had. I was 13 years old. I thought kids always think they know everything. Looking back, it's like, you know, at 13, I hadn't really lived enough of a life to really understand past life regression and past life regression therapy. I was able to understand it from a cognitive perspective, like, oh, okay, this person has all these fears and traumas, and they're getting past life regression therapy, and it's removing these traumas. Like, that's what I loved about this book so much, was this woman, and I didn't have any fears or phobias that I needed to work through. I had trauma from abuse from, my dad was an alcoholic, and when he would drink, he would become abusive. And so I had trauma from that in my childhood. But nothing like my kid, like no phobias like that, like where it's like, you know, this really intense, you know, gripping fear. I never had anything like that. For me, it was more of a curiosity, but I love that in the book, Brian Weiss talks about this patient, his first client patient who came to him. You know, he had been He was the head psychiatrist at Mount Sinai Hospital in Miami. And this woman came to him because she had all these fears. And one of them was a fear of drowning and a fear of water. And he, you know, regresses her. And in his mind, he's thinking that, you know, they're going to stumble across like some incident when she was a toddler, like she fell into a pool or something, right? Well, no, it ends up taking her back to a past life. And he didn't really believe in this stuff at that time. And then she ends up talking to spirits. Like they go in that place between lives. And she ends up talking to masters and spirits and spirit guides. And she's relaying very personal information to him about his life. Now, remember, this book was written in the 80s. There was no internet. She could not Google him to find out any information. So she's giving him like really, really personal information that there is no way she could have possibly known this. And that's what finally convinced him that, oh, this might be real. But one of the things, there's always skeptics, and my ex-husband was a huge skeptic about all of this stuff. And I always like to use that example of the woman who had the fear of drowning, because whether it really was a past life trauma or it was just confabulation in her mind and her mind created the story, the fact of the matter is, after she had this therapy, she no longer had the fear of drowning. So the way I was looking at it from a therapeutic perspective is, does it matter? Does it matter if it's real or does it matter if it's confabulation? If it's getting the results desired, if it's getting the desired results and she no longer has this fear of drowning and she's cured of all her fears and phobias, and little by little, that's what they did. They worked on each session. They worked on one issue at a time, and they found that a lot of her issues related to traumas and past lives. And so that's what really got me hooked into this whole world of past life regression and past life regression therapy.
That's wonderful. That's so wonderful. You know, my mother was a past life regressionist. She was also a psychic medium, but she never regressed her own. She never regressed herself, and she never found anyone who could get rid of her own phobias. Isn't that interesting? I mean, it's interesting how sometimes we as healers and practitioners, sometimes we have a lot of stuff going on, and I think the same is true for therapists and psychologists, right? Physician, heal thyself, right? But I love to hear her stories of how things happened, and everybody she worked with was different. And I agree. I think about that sometimes when you hear stories about, you know, people that work in the spiritual world, and it turns out they're not very nice people. And then everybody always says, but what about the people they gave healings to? And I always say, well, you know what? If somebody got a healing out of the experience and they didn't know that this person was, you know, maybe not spiritually very full of integrity, it doesn't matter. All that matters is that person got healed. So we need to stop judging how others get their healings, right? Because whatever gets you where you got to go, whatever keeps you on your path, gets you on your path and keeps you on your path, and everybody's story is different. Some people have to go into very deep religion. That's part of their organized religion. That's part of their path. Some people have to, you know, be in a cult for a while or get, you know, so new agey that it's almost like an addiction. Okay, whatever gets you on your path and keeps you on your path. And I think it's the same thing with getting over phobias, whatever works, you know.
Right. Yeah.
Or
I mean,
anxiety or depression.
That's exactly, you know, I, like you mentioned in the intro, you know, I've been working with trauma. It's really interesting. Lately, a lot of my clients have been coming to me for trauma, which is great. Like, you know, when I was in school and in training, they would say, you know, you pick your specialties, but really your specialties will pick you. So I've just been having a lot of clients coming to me for trauma. And one of the things that I found very effective that I like to do, I'm fascinated by the mind. I've always been fascinated by the conscious, you know, the conscious and the subconscious and just how it works together. And the mind fascinates me, the human mind and why we are the way we are and why this person feels this way and this person can't wrap their head around it. And, You know,
yes.
I was married to someone who, I'm not going to talk too much about him, but the only thing I will say is our minds are complete opposites. And I just could not, you know, and it would fascinate me at times, like almost like I want to do a case study because I cannot understand how this person thinks or processes. I cannot wrap my head around their
yeah.
mental process, you know, so I've always been fascinated by all of that, and I wanted to study psychology when I was younger. When I was 16, I wanted to study psychology, and I, you know, much later in life found myself in hypnotherapy school, which is not exactly the same, but similar. And I think about going back and getting a degree in psychology, and that is something that I've been kind of going back and forth in my head about. But what I like to do with my clients in hypnotherapy is, because it's all about brainwaves, and you take them into a more relaxed state of mind. Like normally we're in, like right now you and I are in beta state, and most people go in and out of beta and alpha state throughout the day. But then theta takes you deeper. And so when you're in hypnosis, I take you into the theta state, and we go really deep into that state, and I like to talk directly to the subconscious. So we'll sit there, and whatever we're dealing with, if it happens to be trauma or if it happens to be a specific fear or an anxiety or a phobia, to ask the questions directly to the trauma or the trauma response. I had one client, for example, and she is giving me permission to share this. I'm not sharing her name, but just this part of it. She had come to me for trauma because she realized that a trauma earlier in her life, which kept her an introvert and kept her isolated and kept walls up, and it was preventing her from having relationships and getting close to people because she just didn't trust anybody. And so the question that I like to go in and ask, whether it's a trauma, a fear, an anxiety, is, what is your purpose and how are you serving me? How are you protecting me? And that's
yeah.
a really good question to ask, because the one thing that we in our conscious minds forget is that everything our subconscious does is with the intention of keeping us safe and alive. So
yeah.
if your subconscious is causing a trauma response to something somebody did or said, then, and even though cognitively that might, you know, look crazy or whatever to the outside world, internally, that action, that gesture, that response is actually meant to, in some way, protect you. So to go
right.
in and ask the subconscious, like, you know, how do you protect me? How does this trauma response serve me? And with this one client, we went in and we asked that question, and she came out of it just with such a profound awareness now. And she said, it protected me by keeping, the walls protected me by keeping me safe, by keeping me alone. But they also prevented me from developing relationships because they kept everybody out. And once she brought this out of her subconscious, once she brought this into her conscious, once we bring something out of our subconscious and it goes into the conscious awareness, it's no longer subconscious, and then we can deal with it the way we would deal with anything else. So
yeah.
So sometimes it's getting those answers that I find to be really profound. And so a lot of the hypnotherapy work, you know, you have someone who says, okay, I have this issue. Okay, great. Why do you have this issue? Well, I don't know. It's like, you know, when you're in a relationship and then it's a toxic relationship and then your next 10 relationships are with the same person, the same personality, different name, different face, different background story, but why are you attracting the same personality? Let's go into the subconscious and find out what the story is.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That's fascinating. Isn't that interesting? Because, you know, I think we think of our conscious mind is like when you walk into a very small office, but there's a very big warehouse behind it that you never see, right? And that's sort of our subconscious. So what people
right.
see of us in our conscious state and this incarnate state that we're in on our life on the earth this time, people see such a small amount of what's actually all in there.
Yes.
And occasionally, you meet people you can share a bit of your subconscious with, but it's your soul, right? But it's not all the time.
That was really interesting when I learned this in hypnotherapy school. I went to the Hypnosis Motivation Institute in Tarzana. I think they're all online right now, but they used to be an in-person facility. And one of the things I learned there was the subconscious is responsible for most of our everything, most of our actions, most of our responses, everything, like the subconscious is responsible for, I think, like 87%, 88%. It's some high percent, and where the conscious mind is only responsible for about 12%, 10 to 12%. So,
yeah,
you know, it's really fascinating when you look at somebody's behaviors. So instead of reacting to somebody's behaviors, to stop and look and acknowledge and say, okay, what has this person gone through or what is their mind currently going through that's causing them to react or respond in this way? And I think learning that has helped me to be less reactive and more empathetic and more understanding when I see things that I normally wouldn't understand or be understanding of.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree. I think that, yes, and I think that's so important. That's why I think it's, as a spiritual practitioner, I always teach that, you know, we really have two selves, right? We have our soul self, our 5D self, our spiritual self, which actually is our real self that travels from life to life and goes home in between, and it's organically who we are because Earth is really just soul school. And then we have our 3D self, and I think one of the challenges is when you begin to develop your spiritual self, it feels so good to be close to spirit and close to home and close to everything that our unconscious is about that it's hard to deal with the real life challenges of your earth elf, right? And the real goal, what spirit wants for us every life, is to integrate our unconscious and conscious, to integrate our soul life and our human life, so that everything sort of plays well together. But that's a hard place to get to. And you have to overcome obstacles and challenges and trauma and phobias and all that kind of stuff, right, in order to get to that place, or something, Jackie, kind of keeps hitching you up.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly it's, and Brian Weiss talks about that in his books too. I've read all of his books. He's my favorite author on the subject, and I know many people have written about it since him, but I think he was really the pioneer that really broke through making it more mainstream in the 80s with his first book, With Many Lives, Many Masters. And, you know, and he talks about it like, you know, it's your soul evolution, but also that you get to choose. The last time, and I thought this was really interesting, the last time that I saw him live at a seminar, he comes, you know, he travels, he does his workshops and his seminars, and the last time he came to San Diego, I want to say it was like 2017 or 18, and I was working on my documentary that addresses the suicide crisis, and I was curious. And I know, you know, every spiritual person you ask is going to have a different answer. And every, you know, from Christianity to Judaism to Islam to Buddhism, I'm sure,
yeah,
all the religions, you know, have their own answers to this question. But I was curious what Brian Weiss, being that, you know, when you look at, like, the work that he does, and it's like, well, you could be a Buddhist or a Christian or a Jew or, you know, a Muslim. It doesn't really matter to appreciate his work. And he talks about how it's very much like it's soul school, right? It's soul school. So you might be one religion in this life, one religion in the next life. You might go through everything. Your soul might experience every single religion that there is. But the question I had on my mind at the time was what happens when people kill themselves, when they suicide? You know, because like I said, every religion is going to have their own answer to this. And so I had this question in my mind, and I'm about to stand up to ask the question because they're doing the Q&A part. And the lady who stood up to ask the question right before me asked my exact question, so I sat down. And,
wow.
And I thought it was great. It was like cosmic timing, because I don't really like to stand up and ask questions, but if I, you know, I was at that point, I'm like, oh, I need to know this. I'm doing this documentary. This is the only time I'm going to be in the same room with Brian Weiss, and I really am just curious. Like, I don't know that I'm going to even mention a spiritual aspect in my film. I just want to know what his answer is to this question. And so the lady had asked because her sister had taken her life. And she was curious, and she's like, you know, in my religion, I believe that, you know, in my religion, I'm taught that she went to hell, but I believe these spiritual practices, so I don't really believe that there is a hell. And, you know, what do you have to say on this, Dr. Weiss? And I remember his answer being, well, nothing. They get to decide. It's, you know, so suicide isn't punished the way that religions teach, according to Dr. Weiss.
Right.
And instead, the soul chooses whether or not they want to come back, whether or not they want to, and oftentimes the soul will feel guilt for the pain that it caused its loved ones. So
yes,
oftentimes they will decide, they will make the choice that to go back and do it differently. But they don't have to. It's up to the soul. They might say, you know what, I'm sorry, and I'll find some other way to make it up to my loved ones that I hurt, but I'm not going back to that place. And, you know,
right.
I mean, it's really up to the soul. So it's not, and I was just curious, just because, like I said, I was working on a documentary, and every religion, every spiritual practice is going to have its own answer to that question. And, you know, and they might dispute it. And the truth is, until we're there, none of us can say for certain anyway.
Yes. Yeah, it's absolutely true. And how it's been explained to me in my conversations with Spirit is sort of that it's like after every life, right, you have an evaluation period where you sort of sit down with Spirit, God, Goddess, whatever you want to call your higher power, and just kind of review what the life was in the same way that you would at the end of a class with a professor, right? And then if for whatever reason you didn't learn the lessons that you need to learn in each life, then that is also something that's going to be discussed. Because if you're going to come back, probably get hit with a lot of those same lessons in the same way that if you fail a class, you're going to have to make it up the next semester. And you're right. Some people just decide to say, I'm done. That's it. I don't care. But many people
yep.
come back and redo it because they want to achieve that different level of enlightenment, right? Everybody doesn't decide to have the same level of enlightenment in the same way that some people get PhDs and some people drop out in the sixth grade. There's no, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
You decide where you want to go. But if you want to continue to go, then you have to go back and fix that stuff. And sometimes you viscerally have to fix it, right? And sometimes you have to fix it in the form of past life trauma where it's coming at you in a subconscious way and it has to be fixed in a different way.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But
and
I find
think,
it very
and that's
sad.
Also with I'm go sorry, ahead. Go ahead.
I cut you off. I said, but I find it very sad
that
people that, yeah, go.
I think there's like a little bit of a delay because,
yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, I was just going to say that I think it's interesting when people bring up the theory of, you know, we talk about past lives and then we talk about parallel realities, and then to kind of like dive into that discussion and topic of like, well, how many, you know, if our soul is experiencing this and our soul kills itself in one reality, what happens in the other realities? And so, you know, it's then you start going and branching into a really weird quantum area.
Mm-hmm. The matrix. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right? Yeah, exactly.
You yourself, your soul isn't killing itself. Your soul is deciding to kill the body that's in this incarnation.
Exactly.
And it's just like dropping a class, right? It's like dropping a class, and then you get an incomplete. But it makes me sad that people think that there's a place where people go when they kill themselves and it's like a hell, that it's a punishment. Because it's not. On this planet, right, 100% free will. And part of that free will is the right to opt out and go home early if that's what we want. Now, there may be something to discuss. It's like when you're in college, they're not going to put you in jail for dropping a class. But they're going to be like, you know what? But if you want to graduate, that class is going to be waiting for you. And so I think as humans, we always go to this fire and brimstone. Plus, I think organized religion has become very powerful in people's lives throughout the history of mankind by instilling fear. And that's a gigantic fear, right? You have to stay here. You have to stay here. And it's probably because when a lot of religions were formed, they had a dog in the game with keeping everybody alive because they needed bodies to keep the religion going. But now on the earth, we don't really need bodies to keep anything going. So I think we forget sometimes when we read these religious doctrines what things were put in for cultural reasons and sociological reasons and what things actually are coming directly from spirit. But it's interesting because I find in my spiritual work, and you probably do too, that there's a grain of truth in everything, right? And when I describe where folks go for the evaluation after they kill themselves, in a way, it's kind of like purgatory. It's not the way that Catholics describe purgatory, but it is an idea of sort of an evaluation place where you're sort of in holding while you have discussions with the powers that be about how this life went. So I think that even sometimes the craziest sounding religious doctrines or the craziest sounding New Age practices or whatever, there's a grain of truth in things often, don't you think?
Yeah, and it's interesting because it's reminded me of the movie. Somebody recently recommended to me the movie Defending Your Life.
It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, it was a great, fantastic movie. I went home and watched it that night because it's related to another project I'm working on. I'm trying to do some research on it as far as, like, how to write it. So, yeah, I thought that movie was fantastic. And, you know, something similar to that where you have, like, a council of spiritual beings, and it's not really, you know, a god or a devil, and it's not really a heaven or a hell, and it's really, I think, the universe is far more complex than our feeble human minds can even comprehend.
Absolutely.
But, you know, I think that, yeah, you know, the soul, it's like, the soul is mental. Everything is mental, right? I don't know if you're familiar with the Kybalion.
Yes, a little bit. Yes, not an expert, but yes, absolutely.
Right. So the first principle with the seven principles, the first one is the universe is mental, right? The all is mental. So, you know, everything is energy. And we can all, like, thought transmission, you know, we can hear each other's thoughts and we can feel each other's vibrations, you know, like good vibes, or when someone walks in a room and they're really depressed and all of a sudden the whole energy of the room changes, you know. I think we are all connected in a way that I don't think we can really fully understand. I think we try to understand. And I think it's more simple and more complicated than we can possibly grasp.
I agree. Yeah, I completely agree. I think if you don't look for it to be so complicated, it's much simpler than it is.
Exactly.
I think sometimes
it's like one of those things, like, it's so simple that we complicate it.
Right. I was just going to say, I think human beings make things incomprehensible, and then that gives them the excuse to not try to understand them. Spirit is very practical.
Right?
And I have clients that are blown away by this, right? But spirit is basically a mirror. It's very practical. I mean, if you want your boyfriend to come back and every day all you say out loud is, he's never coming back, he's never coming back, he's never coming back, then sometimes spirit's like, oh, okay, he's never coming back. I think people, again, from organized religion, right, Jackie, have this belief that first that God is basically a person, a being that acts and has all of people's stuff like vengeance and revenge and hatred and all the stuff that are very much incarnate concepts. Spirit is a mirror. Like sometimes people say, well, I never get what I want. And I always say, but do you ask for it? Because some of the spirit's like, look, we're just hanging out here waiting for you to tell us what you want. So I find
exactly,
spirit to be, and I'm a, I'm a spiritual person, but I'm also, I'm a lover of science and a lover of psychology. And I find the way that spirit functions to be extremely practical. It's not
Let's circle that into the laws of assumption and laws of attraction. And the law of assumption and law of attraction are very similar. And I think the law of attraction is more popular and more mainstream and more well-known and more talked about. But, you know, but that's exactly what the laws say, both of them, is it's the universe or spirit or God or whatever you choose to call it, the higher power, your source. Really, it's like you're the boss. And what do you want to experience in this life? And, you know, when you sit there and say, and I have this discussion with my mom all the time because she spends money on lottery tickets every week. And she'll always, she'll spend money on lottery tickets and she'll say, oh, I hope I win the lottery this week. And then the very next sentence out of her mouth is, I'm so broke. So what spirit or the universe is hearing is, I hope, and I am so broke. And then there's also something that I work with my clients in having a strong mental diet, but also in being very, very careful with the words that you use after you say, I am.
Mm-hmm.
Don't sit there and say, oh, I hope I win the lottery, and then turn around and say, I'm so broke, or I'm so whatever, insert negative thing, you know, like, oh, I want, you know, I want $1 million, but I'm so broke. Or I want to win this contest, but I never win anything. You know, so then spirit says, okay, well, you want and you never win. So you're going to keep wanting and you're never going to win.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly. But I think also that
I mean, I have nothing against organized religion, and I think if people want to stay in their religion and be completely devout to it, that's fantastic. I would rather say you have some faith than no faith at all. But I think that organized religion, because of its sociological and its cultural aspect of controlling community when it was started, it sort of sets people up to fail, right? It tells people various things, right? An average human being like you can't talk to God. You have to go through clergy. You can't have communication with spirit on your own. God is mad at you for this. You're never going to get that because God doesn't want people to ask for too much. Why are you having the sin of conceit? I mean, it really teaches disempowerment. And I think people, when they come to a fork in the road of enlightenment, right, Jackie, where they're looking for something beyond that, to try to get on their path and the next phase of their path and figure out who they are, they get hitched up in those old mores of I can't because I'm just a human and I'm not enough. And I think it takes people a long time. Now, I'm not one of those metaphysical New Agey folks who believes there is no higher power and I am my own God and I make all my decisions. No, I know there is something out there that is giant and intelligent and benevolent and loving and huge and way smarter than I will ever be in 100 lifetimes. And I like that because I want to learn from something and from energy that is much more advanced than me. But it's also not mad at me all the time or resentful or, you know, bitch slapping me because I went to another church to see what it was about. And I think that those are fears that human beings have put into other human beings. And I think a lot of getting on the next phase of your path is growing beyond that, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And that's where, you know, the work that I do with the mind, like you said, you know, I'm spiritual and I'm also really into science. So it's, you know, it's, and I, what I think is fascinating too is science is catching up and you have people like, Joe Dispenza and Dr. Bruce Lipton, right? So they're people who come from, and Brian Weiss comes from the medical background, the medical world, who have crossed over into the spiritual world. And, you know, there is a balance and there is a crossover. And you know, organized religion never worked for me. And I feel like I've been on a spiritual quest my whole life. And trying to find what makes sense and what works, what actually works and what's actually real. Like, I'm seeking the truth in what's actually real, right? And so, and I'm always interested in learning. And if there's more information that I can glean, then great, send it my way. It doesn't mean I'm going to accept it all or believe it all, but I would love to read it and I would love to learn and I would love to, you know, be open and receptive to hearing other ideas, and maybe it resonates and maybe it doesn't. Maybe it makes perfect sense and I'm like, aha, light bulb moment, that's it. That's what I've been seeking my whole life. Or, okay, thanks for sharing and that doesn't resonate with me and I'm going to go along my way now. Like, I don't see the point in disagreeing with somebody. Like, you know, atheists and Christians love to go at it back and forth. And it's like, what's the point? Like, why are you arguing just to regurgitate the same, you know, the same spiel over and over and over again, when really, I mean, who cares? let them have right. their beliefs, and you have your beliefs. And, you know, for me, mine are very rooted in science and spirituality, and I feel like there is absolutely crossover.
Yeah, it's interesting,
you know,
because
mind.
I was raised...
We can track the mind.
Right. I was raised by my mother, who was a psychic medium but didn't tell people. I didn't really have hardly any other family members around, so basically just her influence. And she called herself a Christian. So I believe that Christianity was much different than when we moved to Southern California, to a part of SoCal that was extremely religious. And I started getting hit up, people in college, people in high school. I came home to my mom and I said, how come you're a Christian and you're not anything like these people? And my mom laughed and said, well, honey, I'm a Teachings of Christ Christian. I don't really deal with what the people tell me to do. I follow what I believe was what Christ was talking about, which when you think about it, right, Jackie, was very similar to what Buddha was talking about. Because when my mom began to move into the New Age community when I was the first year I was in college, and all she kind of secretly too read, you know, Edgar Cayce and Sylvia Brown and different people. But when she started talking about it, started taking classes, and that whole world became a part of my life, I was like, wow, well, Buddhism's not a whole lot different than everything Mom was teaching me. And honestly, my mom didn't really know anything about Buddhism. But for her, what she considered to be the teachings of Christ was so very similar to the teachings of Buddha. And she honestly believed that there was the same energy that came into both of them because the world needed messages, right? So sometimes believing you're something has to do with your community and the people around you and what they're telling you that connection to spirit or spirits needs to be, but you're not listening to spirit, you're listening to people. And I think we need to think about that when we're building our own spiritual palette, right? That you're allowed to believe whatever you want, and you're allowed to, I call it when I do my interfaith services, I call it the spiritual salad bar. You're allowed to go and pick anything you want off the spiritual salad bar and put it on your plate. And it's okay that you want that. It's okay that you don't take other things. It's okay that you sit down in the spiritual salad bar restaurant and enjoy your plate next to somebody else who's got something totally different. We're allowed to build our own spirituality. I mean, you can call yourself a devout Jewish person and go to synagogue every single weekend, but you can also go home and do tarot cards or read books on reincarnation. Like, there are no limits as to how we're supposed to put our spiritual palette together, except that I believe it's supposed to continually evolve as we become more enlightened. Do you believe that?
Hell yeah. I mean, we're supposed to.
That's the only way that I think it's supposed to continually change. I mean, it's okay to keep things that you believe, but then you find more things you didn't know about and you incorporate them in. And, you know, my mom had a psychological
always
background.
Amending.
She, right. Yeah.
I'm always amending who we are.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Always changing and growing. Yeah, my mom had a psychological background, and when she came out as a psychic medium and started incorporating that into her life, I saw how, like, very similar it was. And I do believe that. I believe if you look at what spiritual people tell you and if you look at what psychological people tell you, it's not all that different. It's just the terminology and the slight bent of how you look at it.
Right.
So for you, being a lover of psychology, when you are doing a past life regression on someone or you're dealing with past life trauma, are you sort of using that part of your palette as well?
Yeah, I like to, in the pre-talk with the client, find out what it is that they are wanting to get out of the experience. People want to know different things. One of my clients wanted to know about a specific relationship. When did our souls first meet? What lifetime? How many lifetimes have we had together? And then you get people who are like that. And then you have people who come to you for actual traumas and actual, I have a fear of flying, my kid. And I don't know where it came from, but I need to fly across the country, so I need to get over it. Or, fear of dentists. I don't work with fear of dentists, although I would like to get that training because I know how beneficial it would be. But really, clients will come for all different things. And then you have the clients who are mm-hmm. not there for a therapeutic reason, that are just there to just because of curiosity. They're just curious. I want to know who I was in the past life. I had to warn one client who said to me, I'm going to be really upset if I find out that I wasn't somebody famous. And I said to her, you're probably going to be pretty upset.
Oh, my
gosh. Everyone's like, I want to be Abraham Lincoln. I want to be Cleopatra. I want to go back in history and find out that I was somebody who mattered. I want to find out I was somebody important. Oh. Well, you did matter and you were important. You just might not have been Benjamin Franklin.
Yes. Exactly. A lot of people matter and are essential to the world, but they're not famous.
Exactly. And so that's one of the first things I have to tell clients is, if you're here because you think you're going to see yourself as Abraham Lincoln or Cleopatra, you're probably going to be disappointed. And the fact that I actually had a client come out and say that, I was like, I should probably preface my sessions with that and let people know. It's not impossible to tap into, and so there's another theory that people tap into, again, what I was saying, the source, right, the source of all. So if you're going big, right, if we're going metaphysical here for a minute, and we're going, and more occult, this is really more Kybalion, so if everything is one, if we are all one, we are all part of one source soul, right? We all come from the same source material that sparked all these different stories, and each one of us is one story, universe. We're all one verse in the story of life, right? So if we're all one and we're all connected, is it possible that you could tap into the energy that existed as Abraham Lincoln and see yourself experiencing that? Sure, absolutely. Absolutely, that's possible. But does that mean that you yourself were the soul that was Abraham Lincoln? Probably not.
Energy, right? Because the soul who was Abraham Lincoln is probably still here trying to figure something out.
Oh, yeah, totally. Probably living a different life, the soul already had the experience of being a public figure, So it's like I feel like souls want to kind of experience all of it, the whole, from living a life in poverty to living a life in extreme wealth and everything in between, so you have the full range of the human experience.
Absolutely true. And it's interesting because I know that my mom and I traveled many times together, and she had the same Victorian thing that I had, only mine was I was very, very poor. All mine is like dirty streets and sewage, and all of hers was like Easter bonnets and cocktail parties. So it was like we had two, and I was like, wow, was I your maid? Because we had like two very different images of what it was like to live at that same time, which I think is fascinating.
Definitely fascinating. One of my clients had a really interesting experience where she actually saw herself. So her and her dad have that same thing where her and her dad travel together in many different incarnations. And she saw herself as a baby who died as a baby. And in fact, it was before 2020 that we did this regression. It was like maybe 2019, and then the pandemic happened. So this client saw herself as a baby who died of the Spanish flu of that pandemic. So she saw herself die at the age of two when her and her parents had immigrated from Italy to America. And during that is when she got sick, and then she died. And then at the time that she died, the mom in that life was pregnant with and gave birth the very next day to the man who is her father in this present life. So she was supposed to be the aunt of her father. And then ended up coming in and being his daughter. And so she saw this stuff, and at first she was like, you know, a lot of times people come out of this and they're like, was that real or did I just make something up? And what was really cool about this particular experience was she was able to go and validate. She had never heard about a great aunt who passed away when they were a baby. And then, you know, she came out of this experience and told her dad about it. And his jaw about hit the floor, and he was like, I never told you about that. And so they were able to actually validate that story. And I love when people are able to validate their past life experiences.
Oh, I agree. That's the best of all, right? So what do you think about, this is very heavy as a final question, but what do you think about people that you definitely have a soul tie to? There's definitely some kind of karma there. And you can tell you've traveled with them before and there's a familiarity, but they're just not good for you. I mean, they're just, in this life, for whatever reason, they are toxifying up your life like nobody's business. How hard is it to explain that?
Well, I think my ex-husband and I had that type of relationship. It was very much, I knew his soul. And I had gone and done some regressions, but at the same time, he is a very toxic person. And when I'm in my more spiritual states, it's like I can acknowledge that his soul agreed to play this role in my life, that he said, okay, I'm going to be this person who's going to carry out this role so you can have these experiences. And what's interesting about that is I don't feel soul love for him. I do feel like we can cut the cord. I've said to him many times, I don't wish to see you in this lifetime or any other. I like to feel that, like, the work that we, whatever coin was owed was paid, is what I like to believe about my and his relationship. Because I do believe there are relationships like that. They are, you know, let's look at Amber Heard and Johnny Depp. That relationship.
Sure.
These are two people who probably have a very toxic history with each other. Now, when they come together, when they first reunite, there's a lot of chemistry and passion and everything is great and wonderful. But then, you know, the soul patterns resurface, because it's really the patterns that we come into the lives with. It's you know, one of my kids is a natural born musician. I have no doubt he's been a musician in all of his lives, or at least the last several. You know, he's the type of kid that can hear a song and pick up an instrument and all of a sudden he's playing that song you just heard on the radio.
Yeah, sure.
You know, he's got that. So I'm like, he came in with that talent. And sometimes people are, you know, we come in with our patterns and our talents. And that's, there's a really interesting book. If you haven't read it, I would highly recommend it. It's called The Cosmic Cradle. And it talks about people planning their lives and the souls choosing their family and choosing their parents. And so, like I mentioned, my twins, when they were toddlers, used to talk about, you know, my one used to talk with an accent and the other one, and fear of planes, and the other one talked about the big earth. And I currently have a four-month-old, and although she doesn't talk right now, when she gets to that age where she can, I can't wait to ask her questions about who she was before she came into this world, and you know, all those memories should still be intact. And some of it might be toddler babble, but you know, it's at that age those memories come in with us, and so it'll be interesting to see what kind of stuff she tells me. And
yeah, I think
I hope I'll be smart enough to write it down.
Exactly. I was just going to say, write it all down. You are wonderful, my friend. Let's do this again soon. We'll find you online.
Yes. People can find me online on Instagram and Twitter. I just rejoined Twitter recently, so I've got like 10 followers. So feel free to find me on there. Instagram and Twitter, I am at Jackie Blue Life, and Jackie is spelled J-A-C-Q-U-I. Yeah, thank you. And you can find me at JackieBlue.net, and that has all of my, you can find my films or my hypnotherapy and all the stuff that I do in that one website.
Fantastic. Thank you for being here. The wonderful Jackie Blue, everybody. She's terrific. If you missed those links, find me, SheenaMetalSpiritual.com. Find me on social media everywhere at SheenaMetal. And, of course, here I'm at LiveParanormal.com every Wednesday at 6 o'clock Pacific Time. And my Raising the Vibration show every 5 o'clock Pacific Time, and I'm Raising the Vibration show every Tuesday at 5 o'clock Pacific Time. Until I see you next time, my friends, seek peace, live in love, lead with kindness, unity. Always, always work to raise your vibration and know that you are love and you are loved. I'll see you next time, and I'll see you next week. Take care.